This is Finding Christ in Cinema. You have my permission to listen.
On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we take the station wagon to Haddonfield, Illinois, and look for Christian themes in John Carpenter's classic horror film, Halloween. How is Michael Myers an unstoppable, immovable, and inevitable evil? How is Dr. Samuel Loomis a light for the truth and a watchman for the people? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Hey, come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 154. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, the plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Happy birthday, Brendan.
Oh, thanks, man.
It is Halloween.
Except a couple days from now recording, right?
That doesn't make any sense. It's a couple of days prior to Halloween. This episode is released on Halloween for the podcast listeners, correct?
Halloween's on Tuesday.
Yeah, and this episode goes out on
Monday.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll say that. I'll do all that on our next show, Secret Fire Podcast, because that is released on Halloween.
But Michael, I appreciate the sentiment,
okay,
man.
Tomorrow, now I'm all goofed up. Should we start over? No.
No.
What did we talk about last week?
Last week, we talked about the slow burn sci-fi Jeff Nichols hit Midnight Special, and we had a special guest on, Mr. Scott Kelly.
That was a fantastic episode, but it was not a hit. That movie is not a hit.
Why not?
Because hits are measured in money earned.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Forgive me. Should I say sleeper hit? Is it a sleeper?
Should have been a hit.
It should have been a hit.
It was an excellent film, a monster of a film as far as Christian themes go. We likened it to the Chronicles of Narnia. You know, if I would have known ahead of time how overtly Christian that film was, I would have said, we don't need to do that movie. It's obvious.
We still need to do it.
I'm glad that we did. I hope that all of our listeners enjoyed that episode and that you have watched Jeff Nichols's non-hit from 2016, Midnight Special. Did you have any addendums, afterthoughts? Oh, and another thing.
Not for me.
No. Well, no. I actually did have a whole list of things that I wanted to bring up, but after spending the past few days watching today's film.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, goodness. It pushed out all the happy things, Brendan.
Yeah.
All the happy things. What are we talking about this week?
Today we are talking about a hit by any standard. We are talking about John Carpenter's original 1978 Halloween.
Oh, with great trepidation, I ask, are you ready to go to the theater?
I believe so.
Oh.
Halloween night. A small American town. 15 years ago. Halloween.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. I think he'll come back.
Exploring uncharted territory.
And totally charted.
Just talk.
Sure.
The only reason she babysits is to have
a Halloween.
very creepy. Right off the bat.
Yeah.
That trailer. Oh, yeah. Not much dialogue, but the ambiance of it, the sounds and the screams and the very Halloween-ish, Octoberween-ish. Yes. Brendan, I feel like we have gone back in time 2 years. I believe it was 2015 when we covered The Shining.
The Shining. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And learned about how the moon landing was faked through that.
Exactly.
What did we learn through this film? What was faked in this one?
You know, that's an excellent question. I have no idea.
This is something about how the world is flat, I think. No?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, because Donald Pleasance is the giant sea turtle on which the flat earth floats, right?
Yes, metaphorically speaking.
Metaphorically speaking.
Yes. Yes. Okay, Brendan, 1978, Halloween. This was a phenomenal hit.
Mm-hmm.
A very low-budget independent film.
Yes.
I mean, so low-budget that the actors were wearing their own clothes.
Yeah.
There was no wardrobe. Yeah. That broken-down house,
mm-hmm.
that was the Myers house, was a broken-down house.
Yeah.
That the actors and crew went in and cleaned up and wallpapered and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, got the electricity working, yep. water going to it.
Yep.
Wow.
The mask, I mean, I'm sure by now everyone knows this, the mask is a $2 Captain James T. Kirk mask.
Yes.
Which they bleached and they painted white.
Mussed up the hair.
They mussed up the hair and they cut out bigger eye holes.
Yeah.
That's how low budget, the total budget for the film for at that time was $300,000. Very, very independently produced. And yet it grossed over $47 million. In its initial run. That's incredible.
That is incredible indeed.
So this is a hit by any standard,
yeah.
right? Okay,
yep.
good. All right.
This is the opposite of Jeff Nichols' excellent Midnight Special.
Mm-hmm.
Now, talking about that mask, they had they picked out two different masks, apparently. And one was some kind of a clown, creepy mm-hmm. clown type mm-hmm. of a mask. And they said, you know what, that conveys too much. And it elicits the wrong kind of response.
Mm-hmm.
You would think, how could that elicit the wrong kind of response? You want terror, correct? You want this abject terror.
Right.
No. Because according to John Carpenter, his intent with the character of Michael Myers was that the audience should never be able to relate to him.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? As a concept, as a tool, well, we don't want the audience to be able to relate to this person if he actually is a person.
Yeah. Well, it definitely sets up the atmosphere that what we are dealing with in this film, the opposing force is completely other, capital O other, something that we've talked about before on the show. This is something that is unknowable.
Uncontrollable.
As I'll get in my point later on and your point later on, there was even someone in the film, a character, who tried to get to know this person or this, not to borrow from another John Carpenter film, but this thing.
Well done.
He spent 15 years trying to get to know this.
Of 15 years.
He spent 8 years trying to reach him and then 7 years trying to keep him locked up, which we heard in the trailer. That was Dr. Sam Loomis, played by the great Donald Pleasance.
Welcome to the menagerie.
Welcome to the menagerie, yes, sir. Before we do shout-outs, though, I think having Michael Myers as that unknowable presence in the film, though, kind of sets this up to be a, dare I say, morality tale?
Oh, yes, we can. In fact, I would prefer to refer to him as an unmovable force.
Yeah.
Something that one...
Or an unstoppable...
Yes, something that...
Whatever you say.
An inevitable, unstoppable, unmovable force.
There you go.
Wow, okay.
There you go.
So we are talking about a horror film of horror films. This really helped to launch the slasher mm-hmm. genre.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's not too terribly gory.
Thank goodness. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, and before we go any further, parents, kids have no business watching this.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It is rated R for a reason.
A good reason.
A very good reason.
There is nudity throughout. Yeah. There is profanity. There is drug use.
Yeah.
There's drug references. All of the things that you don't want your children to be exposed to at young ages or perhaps even old ages are in this film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on you now. Go to IMDb and check their parents' ratings to find out more. Let's talk about horror. Let's talk about terror. Let's talk about monster films. And why would a good Christian show such as Finding Christ in Cinema be watching a film such as this? Do you have any thoughts?
I do. And I thought about this on the way over. I was actually listening to another podcast and they were talking about Scream. The movie Scream.
I've heard of it. Never seen it.
Oh, it's okay. It's what anyway. But why we're picking this movie and choosing this movie is because we know that this movie has a huge fan base. We know that this movie,
goodness, this is one of the most popular Halloween films.
Yes. We know that people will be watching this film if they haven't already, either on TV or going to maybe one of those movie theaters that actually shows old movies.
Yeah.
And by now this would be considered an old movie. Sorry, Michael. But it is an old movie.
We're talking almost 40 years.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. 40 years next year, actually.
Yes.
If this is 2017.
Oh, there's going to be big to-dos next year. They're going to re-release some kind of a special edition. I guarantee it. 40th anniversary.
Oh, well, Halloween. I actually picked up the 35th anniversary edition Blu-ray.
Ah.
And it actually came with some bonus features. It was very cool. I still want to listen to the audio commentary with John Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis. But anyway.
Getting back to this podcast.
We know that this film is going to be watched how many times? Countless times.
Millions.
So we know that our listeners who are Christians, who do love God, who know God through Jesus Christ, we know that they will have the opportunity to broach the subject of the gospel with this film.
Oh,
and we want to edify and encourage you guys to do so.
Any opportunity that you have to share the gospel, mm-hmm. use it. Mm-hmm. It's like what Yogi Berra would say: if you come to a fork in the road, take it.
There you go.
You know, if you come to an opportunity, your friends are talking about this loved, Halloween film, you will have some tools that you can broach the subject of the good news.
Yeah.
See what happens in this movie? It's filled with bad news. Here's the good news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here's some of the good news maybe that may be lurking underneath the surface of this film itself.
Yeah.
Let's
think about this film as a standalone film. Let's think about this film in terms of its own merit,
a
closed system. This one installment. We're not going into Halloween 2, Halloween 3. Why Halloween 3 was ever made, I'll never know. Because you can't blame this on the mask. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And you can't blame this on some weird commercial where the pumpkin lights up and then, you know, someone's triggered. Because that's what happens.
It is. I'm triggered.
And then you can't blame it. And even though, okay. Backtrack. I'm getting bubbled over. The sequels of this film try to go into deeper things. And Michael, you and I know the term deeper things to mean drama that deals with family matters, drama that cuts to the heart. By making Laurie Strode Michael's sister, that was...
Boy, you were given some... I didn't know that.
Hey.
Spoiler alert.
Hey, sorry.
On this 40-year-old franchise. It's,
exactly. Exactly. But that was never John Carpenter's intention when setting out to make this film.
What was his intention? Do we know?
He wanted to set out, from what I've researched, and listeners, if I'm wrong on this, call me out, but from what I've read and
lovingly
what I've researched...
Lovingly correct your brother.
Yes, thank you. Yes. John Carpenter just wanted to set out to make an amalgamation of urban legends. And it was actually initially titled The Babysitter Murders. So you've got all those urban legends of a babysitter watching kids, and then the boogeyman becomes real, and then wreaks havoc upon a community.
You know, as an aside, I don't know what it's like to be a kid these days, but back in my day, back in the time that this film was made in the late 70s and the early 80s, urban legends were, every day, that's what people talked about. You had Bloody Mary. Don't, you know, look in the mirror. Have you ever heard that one?
Oh, Michael, yes.
Okay,
so at the school that I work at, I'm doing an after-school tutoring program, and we've been reading through Alvin Schwartz's collection of urban legends and scary stories, the Scary Stories Treasury, where it's all three of those books in one edition, one volume. And we actually did, guys, forgive me, but I actually facilitated a Bloody Mary game.
Oh.
but it was to show them the power of what their imaginations can do.
Yes.
Because I don't really think there's anything there, no. but we're going to visualize what we fear is going to be there. If it's a bloody face, did you know that there's even a Spanish edition of Bloody Mary?
No.
She's called La Llorona, the crying woman.
Oh, wow.
That's
even creepier.
It is. And I'll tell you the story later. But, excuse me. We love to imagine scary things because it brings us to certain terms. It brings us to things that we don't know that are completely other, capital O, other, things that we cannot know. We like that, and it stirs us. And it, as we're going to prove, it just provides ample sowing ground for the actual light of truth.
It just presents the field. Here's the field.
Yeah.
Go out and sow. Go out and water. Go out and harvest.
I mean, that's why Scott Derrickson, I love Scott Derrickson. I think you do too, from what you've seen of Doctor Strange at least.
Oh, yeah.
Christian. Yeah, and a Christian, yes. A Christian filmmaker who set out to accurately depict his Christian worldview initially within the horror genre, because he's written and directed films like The Exorcism of Emily Rose, the film Deliver Us from Evil, and then the film Sinister. All of those are powerhouses within the horror genre, and yet they convey the Christian worldview. Very powerful stuff.
We'll have to investigate those.
Yes, yeah.
Some other Octoberween.
Hey, there you go.
Well, okay. Using horror? Does apologetics fit into? Is there any room for apologetics in horror beyond what we have talked about so far?
What do you mean for what do you mean by apologetics?
How would we defend? How would we further defend our decision to cover a film such as Halloween?
Just because we know that fear, and I think we even talked about this briefly last episode with Midnight Special, talking about how if we see characters fearing something, then we automatically are sympathetic toward them.
Oh, yes.
And sympathy is where storytelling has its power. Because if we are sympathetic toward the character, then we let the story have its effect on us.
My mind just exploded because if we see a soul that's near us that is going through a horrific situation,
mm-hmm.
that is, that's the story of the Good Samaritan.
Yeah.
Hey. What happened when the Samaritan came upon that man that was waylaid by the robbers? He felt compassion. Remember, we talked about that.
That's basically been the theme of FCC for this whole year. Compassion.
It has. It really has.
But when it comes to storytelling with the horror genre, we see these characters fearing something, and with a force as magnitudinous as Michael Myers.
Magnitudinous.
Is that a word?
It is now.
with that kind of character, with that kind of entity within the story, we see the characters that we can relate to, Laurie Strode, Annie, Linda, excuse me, I forget their last names, even Dr. Loomis, we see them fear, therefore we have sympathy on them, because humans connect with fear.
And sympathy is something that happens to you. You don't decide to be sympathetic. Exactly.
It is an automatic response. You don't control it.
Your sacrum starts to wiggle and jiggle.
Exactly.
And mine was throughout this entire film. Anything else on that topic before we start some shout-outs?
No, I think we've got it. Let's start the shout-outs. Donald Pleasance.
Yes.
Let's start with him. What'd you think about him?
I love Donald Pleasance. There's just something about him. Just his mannerisms, I really enjoy. I enjoy the way that he speaks, but I also enjoyed him in this film, his character Tix, and also really the sense of foreboding that he was able to convey. You know, because I got to tell you, some of the script in this was a little goofy. You know, it's like, oh, I would have worded that a little bit different, or it, you know, but that's just my opinion, but yeah. He was able to deliver it in with a straight face and in a way that was believable.
Now, see, actually, just a quick note on the script. John Carpenter, because there was such a short filming
window,
20 days. Because it was so short, John Carpenter decided to trust the actors if they ever felt like dialogue needed to be changed, or if they felt like if something could be worded
ad-libbed
differently. Ad-libbed or something like that. Donald Pleasance came into this project, even though he was only on the set for 5 days, and he was paid, I would say handsomely for those 5 days.
Oh, yes.
$20,000 for those 5 days, yeah.
$20,000 goes a long way.
That's $5,000 a day.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. But he came onto it, first of all, after John Carpenter had already expressed the role to Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing.
Yes, and Christopher Lee says it's the greatest mistake he ever made was not taking that. Mm-hmm. FCC's very own Christopher Lee, by the way.
Hey, that's right.
Saruman.
Right. And Peter Cushing.
Oh, yes. FCC's very own as well.
But Donald Pleasance already came onto the set with so much experience. Shakespearean actor, stage actor. Very, like you said, very powerful, very dominant in his acting style.
Yes.
Very, very in your face. He brings a lot of that experience to the set. Therefore, he's able to work within it and give his character, and as any good actor does, give their fellow actors more power in telling the story.
He did well, and he was a joy to watch. What about Jamie Lee Curtis?
Introducing Jamie Lee Curtis. Welcome to the menagerie, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Of course, her mother, Janet Leigh, was in Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And her, she was, I guess, the only teenager of the actors playing teenagers. She was the only one that was actually a teenager.
What'd
you think of her in her breakout role? I mean, she's a household name now.
Jamie Lee Curtis is...
You know, just a legend.
I thought she did very well. I thought her performance was generally overall tempered, and she brought out the fear when it needed to be brought out, and she does a very good job of keeping it very subtle along the way.
Right.
That way, when it is time to be fearful, when, like, for example, when she is in the closet. And Michael Myers is punching through the wooden frame. He's punching through it, and when she's cowering in that corner, that's a very powerful scene.
It is.
Just because you can almost feel how closed in she is. And maybe that's a credit to John Carpenter as a writer as well for putting that scene in there. But Jamie Lee Curtis very well, very effectively.
Adeptly.
Yes, very adeptly carried it out.
Yeah.
So it was very, very intriguing to watch.
Who else do you want to give a shout out to?
Oh, we can talk about Annie, who played Annie, Nancy Keys. Although in the credits, she's credited as Nancy Loomis.
Well, which
I think I read somewhere on trivia about that, and I've completely forgot. But I thought Annie was good as a character. You know, she was kind of one of the not so wholesome influences on Laurie.
Yeah.
Same thing with Linda. PJ Souls, you know, they're both kind of the rowdy.
Yes.
You know, the rowdy or teenagers.
Instigators.
Yep. Yeah. But for what their job was in the story, I thought they did very well.
What about the sheriff? I don't know, remember what his name is, and I don't even know which actor it is. The, you know, the, I mean,
is it Charles Cyphers, maybe?
It could be. Sheriff, but what sheriff did you Beckett? Think about his performance as a sheriff? He seemed very comfortable and very natural in that role.
I'd say so.
I really enjoyed that.
Especially in his scenes with Dr. Loomis.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I'm going to focus on part of that when we get into some Christian themes. That dichotomy and that there's a power struggle going on there. And I thought that he played it very well. And it's very telling. In fact, I'm mentioning these things ahead of time because I want listeners to pay particular attention when I start playing some sound clips. That dichotomy between those two characters, and it really seals the point. And I think that actor did a fantastic job in helping to bolster my point on this. What else do you want to say about this film as we are inching up to the break here?
I think we basically covered it. We've explained how we do see the horror genre as a very, very plentiful.
Oh, yes.
Very,
yes.
Opportunity.
That's a ripe harvest. Yeah, it's a harvest.
Yes,
ripe,
yeah, there you go.
White unto harvest. Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
And so don't be afraid of these things. If you are a Christian, if you are in Christ, you don't have to fear the boogeyman, as he is called in this film, by the kids and ultimately by Lori herself. What you have to fear is the greater message that is in this film, and it has a little bit to do with fate, it has a little bit to do with time and chance, and it has a little bit to do with not living in a right relationship with God.
Yeah.
Brendan, let's flesh that out a little bit more when we get back on the other side of the break here on Finding Christ in Cinema. We're talking about the 1978 hit, Halloween. Brendan, we were busy patting ourselves on the back at the end of the episode, and I forgot that we needed to do a feedback segment.
Hey.
And as we are wont to do, it's time to go on down with our coconut-feeted horse.
Who goes there? It is I.
Bling Blau Oon Chain on Skateboard Pete.
To Bling Blau Oon Chain on Skateboard Pete.
No.
To Patron St. Philip. Well, Patron St. Philip is going to escort us down to King Philip's Stables of Doom.
Quite right. Good idea. Quite right. Good idea. Quite right.
Yes, it is a good idea.
That's my wee lad, Gimli.
Yeah, you come along too, Gimli. He left a comment on our previous episode. What was that? Episode number 153. We talked about Midnight Special with special guest Scott Kelly. You can find that at ChristInCinema.com.
He says, wow, guys, you did a great job with Midnight Special.
Oh, yay. Hey,
thank you. Thank you. Hey, the kids.
Yeah.
Hey, wait. Tell the kids to go back in the closet.
Yes.
We're watching Halloween now.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
It's rated R.
Get out of here, kids.
Anyway, I don't exaggerate, Philip continues.
Tommy and Lindsay.
Yeah, exactly. I don't exaggerate when I say that that may have been the most thorough exploration of Christian themes you've done. Hey.
Well, hey.
Man.
It's because we haven't covered any of the Narnia films. Yeah. I mean, it was just overt.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just fruit everywhere. Yeah. I'll take this. I'll take this.
Look at
I'll
this
take
garden.
This. Yes.
Look at this acre of fruit.
As I said, we could easily spend a month on that film.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just overt allegory. That's why I was blown away. I was expecting the director, Jeff Nichols, to say, oh, yeah, this is an allegory. You know, I was expecting it.
Yep. He continues, Scott was terrific and blended right in with you guys. And yes, he did. It was as if you've been podcasting together for some time already.
Well, he did make us look well, so.
Hey, there you go.
Look great.
I sure hope he becomes a regular guest in the future. One thing I get from Midnight Special is the other side of what Scott was talking about regarding the loss of a child when they grow up. My oldest son will be 24 next month. And when he moved out, it was very similar to the death of a family member.
Oh, yes.
My wife, youngest son, and I all experienced a profound sense of loss and grief. Ultimately, we parents are stewards of our children, and their proper parent is God. Like Michael Shannon and Kirsten Dunst's characters, we need to be willing to let them go when the time is right. and trust God, who loves them more and better than we do. Love the show, guys. Hashtag Mowie Lad Gimli.
Yeah. What do you think of that? Well, you don't know. You're not a parent.
I don't know. I can't comment. So
yeah,
but I can see it from afar. I can agree with it.
Well, I can as well. Oh yeah, I'm a parent. Having four kids. Yes, and so that's it's great messages for parents when you're watching. Why can I never think of the name of this movie? Midnight Special.
Yes.
Just to remind you that those days do come. Time and chance, as we are going to talk about in the second segment, overtakes them all.
Mm-hmm.
And great thoughts, great both of them to point out to us as parents to be prepared and to trust God. That goes with walking in the light. That's what we do as Christians.
Yeah.
And thankfully, when we go when the unfortunate circumstances happen where a child is taken away from us, it is the job of the body of believers to gather and rally around that injured body part. Mm-hmm. Right? We have used that analogy before. If you strike your thumb with a hammer, what happens? What's the first thing that happens? What's the first thing your body does once it senses that pain? Just automatically, your other hand comes to the aid to wrap around that injured, wounded body part. You don't even have to think about it. There is no thought. And that is another picture of that compassion.
Compassion, yeah. Yes. It's an automatic response.
It is. Mm-hmm. It happens. The hand does not decide to do it. It just is compelled to by compassion.
Mm-hmm.
First you feel it, then you do it. Man, that's a message. I don't think that we can overstate that message, Brendan. I don't think that's a dead horse that we can flog. You know, that's not flogging a dead horse. This is something that we must be aware of, how compassion works, because that is what God, what did Jesus say? I desire compassion and not sacrifice. I desire compassion. Go and learn what this means. Anything else?
Well, then just more aggressively, then Jesus also said, go and do likewise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's right there.
Well, which one of these was a neighbor to the man? Well, I suppose the man that showed mercy to him. Go and do likewise.
Mm-hmm.
What must I do to inherit eternal life was the question that spurred on the whole conversation and the whole story of the Good Samaritan. Well, you know the law. How does it read to you? Well, you shall love the Lord your God with all your strength, soul, strength.
I was like, so you know the Shema.
Yes.
You know the Shema. You've demonstrated that. Thank you.
Then, you know, do this and you'll live.
Yep.
Do this and you will live. Well, wait. But who's my neighbor? I got a story for you. I don't think that we can dwell on that too much. And I am so thankful that this past year, Brendan, you pointed it out. It seems that God is speaking about compassion to us here through these films this year.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that will show up in any way in the year-end countdown.
I'm sure it will.
Do you think there's some kind of a narrative that may be strung together? You know, at the very end of the show, Brendan, we told people that we wouldn't be here next week. Then we'll be here for 2 weeks in the middle of November, and then we're taking the last week off. What else is coming up? You want to give our podcast listeners some kind of a teaser?
You know what? I like that idea. So for November, we're doing Spider-Man Homecoming. And what we announce is at the end of the show, which you'll hear in a few minutes. But we're doing Spider-Man Homecoming and Wonder Woman. We're going to catch up on some of those superhero films that we missed out earlier in the year. And then we've got Christmas planned out.
Oh, good. What is it?
So we're starting off with A Christmas Carol, the 1984 version with George C. Scott.
Awesome.
We're going to get that in.
John Carney, our FCC's very own John Carney will be happy about that. This will be our fourth year of covering A Christmas Carol.
And what have we done Christmas Carol so far? We've done
Patrick Stewart,
and then Jim Carrey, the Robert Zemeckis animated version.
Yes, and then the Muppets.
And then the Muppet version.
Yes. And as I always say, each year in December, that is, to me, one of the most profound. In fact, I'm surprised that it has not been squeezed into the canon of Scripture. because I think that absolutely inspired. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see what we learn from this version.
Then we're going to Holiday Inn.
Yeah!
With some more Bing Crosby. And this time Fred Astaire.
Okay.
And who's the female lead in this?
I don't know, but it's about time that we got Fred Astaire in the menagerie.
Yeah, I agree. And then Michael.
Yes?
Michael, you're doing me a favor.
What is that?
You're doing the whole of the listening audience the favor.
Oh, no.
Even though you don't necessarily care for this film. But, Michael, we're doing A Christmas Story.
Oh, gosh. I wish I would have gotten this away out of the way years ago.
I've been trying to tell you we're going to have to do it sometime.
Oh, my goodness. We're going
to have to do it sometime.
I don't like that movie.
It's like whenever you get like a long strip of duct tape accidentally attached to your skin, and you can either pull it off little by little or just do one giant rip.
I'm going to just have to rip it off.
Just going to have to rip it off.
Marjorie Reynolds is the other co-lead in Holiday Inn.
Oh, there you go.
Yes. And when are we going to squeeze in the year-end countdown? Because we're only doing three films in December.
Well, there are actually five weekends in December.
So we'll do it on New Year's weekend?
Yes.
Okay. Which is normally
let's see.
What we
I got the calendar pulled up. So we're going to take the 23rd, December 23rd off. That'll be before Christmas.
Yes.
And then December 30th will be the year-end countdown.
Okay.
So that will actually be released on New Year's Day.
Hey.
So that'd be a good time if you're fortunate enough to be off work, spend some time with your family. That'll be some good catching up on I'm looking back at the old year, and then...
Well, what are we going to do after that?
Oh, Michael.
Yes?
January 2018.
Yes?
Lord willing and the Creek Don't Rise.
Yes?
Or Iluvatar willing and the Bruin Inn don't rise. January of 18 is going to be a Pixar month.
Pixar!
A Pixar month.
Yes!
That is correct. We're looking at Finding Nemo.
Oh, boy. I just watched that the other night.
Yeah. We're gonna tackle Finding Nemo. Well, that's sad. He's a small fish, and we're a couple big guys.
Tackling him?
Yeah, we're gonna tackle him.
Poor guy.
And then
he's got that bad fin. His lucky fin.
He's gimpy. He's the incredible.
call it his lucky fin.
He's the incredible Mr. Gimpet.
Oh boy.
Oh. That was terrible. That's probably one of the worst things I could have ever said. I should never say that. WALL-E. Then we're going to cover WALL-E.
WALL-E.
Which I know has been requested for a while.
I love that movie. I haven't watched it in a good long while, so I am very happy that we're going to be covering that.
And then we've got Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, oh, that's probably that might be my favorite Pixar
film. Mike Wazowski. Michael, I feel really guilty for that incredible Mr. Limpet joke.
Okay, I'll take it out.
Okay, and then we're covering Ratatouille.
Yeah, another one of my very favorite Pixar films. Wow.
I want to say Ratatouille actually, I remember Ratatouille being one of the first films the first Pixar films that I watched as what I would call an older version of myself. And I was like, you know what? Pixar movies can still be good.
No, not can still be. They are still they good. Always have been. Very excellent storytelling and themes in there. So that will get us to, I believe that we will have covered all of the first run films, except for we've never done The Incredibles.
Oh, that's true.
So we're going to have to throw that in somewhere early in the year or so.
Hmm.
The Incredibles. I love that film, too.
Yeah.
We'll
have to work that in there.
Good stuff coming up on Finding Christ in Cinema. Anything else in our special podcast only segment?
No, I think we got it.
No?
No.
All right.
Other than something I didn't mention in the Halloween, in the main portion of the first segment.
Okay.
So you had mentioned the script was kind of lacking.
Yes.
I happen to disagree with you. I think the script was actually really clever.
Oh, okay.
But I feel like some of the camera placement was off. I felt like the camera at some points in the film were at the wrong place in the wrong time. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Because I thought, at least as far as dialogue and story progression, I would think that the script was very, very clever and very, very effective. It was simple and effective.
Well, and I think that depends on who's delivering the lines, because I probably in retrospect now, even though it's coming up, I think. Or did we talk about it already? I don't know. Well, we've definitely talked about it.
We've
this
already,
time travel
this
throws me off.
Crazy.
You know, those child actors. They really.
Oh, okay. Especially not just Tommy and Lindsay, but the, you know, the quote bullies that track down Tommy at school. Okay, so as a stage director, and this is my experience, and Michael, as a lover of theater, you know this too. Whenever the chorus is saying something at the exact same time together, it sounds vaudevillian.
Yes.
And it sounds comedic. And I couldn't help but laugh at the bullies when they were doing that. He's going to get you. Awkward. He's going to get you. It was like a chant.
Yes.
It was like they were singing it. They were doing a little vaudeville routine. Like
they were going to start dancing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I couldn't take it. And the, he's going to get you. The boogeyman. Da, 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 da,
like,
da,
what
da,
is it? West Side Story?
Sharks. And jets. Sharks. Yes. And jets. Freddie and Michael. Freddie and Michael.
Hey, let's get back to some Christian themes here in 1978. Halloween.
But Michael, okay, so West Side Story. When are we going to start doing some musicals?
Let's.
I'm sorry.
Philip will send no feedback. The man despises musicals and all those who love them.
For some reason, I really want to do Singing in the Rain.
Well, let's do it. I want to do Music Man.
Can we talk about February and maybe being a classic?
Don't
musical?
Say anything, because Philip will tune out already.
No. He's not going to drop out just yet. He's going to stick around and listen. He's going to stick around, as will everyone. Okay. So the news has been news.
The weather has been weather.
And the sports have been sported.
Let's get back to finding Christ in cinema. Welcome back to Finding Christ in Cinema, the show where we believe that all the best stories have elements of the greatest story, and that applies even to a slasher horror film such as John Carpenter's 1978 hit, Halloween. Mm-hmm. Michael Myers is back again. He's back again 15 years after these horrific events.
He came home.
He did.
He came home.
Haddonfield, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise known as Pasadena.
Southern California. Yes.
That's right. Sorry.
Part of that trivia that we didn't mention. This film was filmed in Southern California in the springtime. And so they had to bring in leaves to blow around the road as there's palm trees in the background and things like that. And then the budget was so small that they would have to go and collect all the leaves afterward.
Yep.
A shoestring budget is what that is called.
Yeah.
And look what it turned into. Mm-hmm. You know what it turned into? This reminds me of a few films that we have covered here on Finding Christ in Cinema in the past. The recent past was No Country for Old Men.
Oh, yes.
How does it remind me of that? Well, you have an evil that people cannot explain. There is no explanation. There was no explanation for, what was his name in No Country for Old Men?
Anton Seger. Anton.
Yes. There's no way to explain that.
Mm-mm.
There's no way to explain Michael Myers, not in rational words that normal, everyday people can understand. It reminds me going way back, Brendan, to Batman Begins.
Tell me about it.
Oh, you got a little bit of the Watchmen on the wall. Just throw that out there. It also reminds me of the film that we covered on October Ween 2015, The Shining, because in that I focused a lot on prophecy. And listening to prophets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, listening to prophets, you should listen to Watchmen, the Watchmen on the wall as well. But quite often people don't listen to either one of those, and then they have to face an Anton Chigurh, whatever you pronounce his name, or a Michael Myers.
Mm.
Because it's stated in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 11 through 12 out of the NASB, and we have quoted this quite often on this show. I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, and the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability, for time and chance overtake them all. Moreover, man does not know his time. Like fish caught in a treacherous net and birds trapped in a snare, so the sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls on them. You know, I've spent most of my life as a Christian. I had a famous saying, I don't believe in coincidence. There's no such thing as coincidence. There's no such thing as time and chance. Boy, did I directly contradict the preacher.
Kind of missed something there.
Yes, tiny now, chance.
The preacher of Ecclesiastes.
That's correct. Yes, the preacher. Yes. The preacher.
Capital P.
Again, I saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. That goes against everything I've ever been taught. Mm-hmm. And the battle is not to the warriors. That goes against everything I've been taught.
Because those warriors obviously pulled themselves up by the bootstraps.
And neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability, for time and chance overtake them all. We can read that in another translation, but I'm going to encourage the listeners to do that. Read it in the New Living Translation, for example. That's setting up the play, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, to further set that up, this whole movie is encapsulated in one soundbite near the very beginning of the film. After we see the escape of Michael Myers from that psychiatric prison,
yeah,
and Dr. Loomis knows that he is on his way back to Haddonfield. He's got some work to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get this scene inside of a classroom where we first really get to know Lori and the way that her mind works. And we hear the teacher saying, and the book ends. But what Samuels is really talking about here is fate. You see, fate caught up with several lives here. No matter what the course of action Collins took, he was destined to his own fate, his own day of reckoning with himself. The idea is that destiny is a very real, concrete thing, and that every person has to deal with it. How does Samuel's view of fate differ from that of Costain's? Lori?
Ma'am?
Answer the question.
Costain wrote that fate was somehow related only to religion, whereas Samuels felt that, well, fate was like a natural element, like earth, air, fire, and water.
That's right. Samuels definitely personified fate. In Samuel's writing, fate is immovable, like a mountain. It stands where man passes away. Fate never changes.
In Samuel's writings, fate is immovable. We've already discussed that in the first half of the show. It's like a mountain. It stands where man passes away. Fate never changes. Time and chance overtake them all, is what the preacher would say, and did say, as a matter of fact. Do you see how that sets up the story? That sets up the play.
It almost sets it up to mythical proportions. Like, not mythical as in not true, but mythical just in the scope of it, in the scope of its impact.
And I wonder if it is absolutely correct in doing that, setting it up to this supernatural level.
Mm-hmm.
It's not natural. It's supernatural. You can't do anything about it, right? It's like a mountain. It stands where man passes away. So Dr. Loomis is coming back. He's chasing after Michael Myers. He is on his way to Haddonfield, but he comes across an abandoned farm truck, and something doesn't seem right at this scene. So he steps into the phone booth in order to call ahead to Haddonfield. He makes a call to the sheriff.
He's on his way. You've got to believe me, officer. He is coming to Haddonfield. Because I know him. I'm his doctor. You must be ready for him. If you don't, it's your funeral.
Son of man, God said to Ezekiel in chapter 33, verses 2 through 5, and I am reading this out of the NILT, the New Living Translation. Son of man, give your people this message. When I bring an army against a country, the people of that land choose one of their own to be a watchman. When the watchman sees the enemy coming, he sounds the alarm to warn the people. Then if those who hear the alarm refuse to take action, it's their own fault if they die. They heard the alarm but ignored it. So the responsibility is theirs. If they had listened to the warning, they could have saved their lives. The warning has gone out. The watchman on the wall is at a payphone on the side of the road, calling ahead to the sheriff, the man who is responsible for protecting that town.
And something in that sound clip actually ties in really well with my main point. Oh. So I'm just going to make mine real quick.
Good. You don't have to be too quick. We got plenty of time.
Well, I know. But I want to capitalize on the sound clip because what qualifies Dr. Samuel Loomis. Dr. Sam Loomis. Yes, thank you. What qualifies him to be a watchman?
He knows this.
He knows. He has a relationship with Michael Myers. He knows what he is capable of. He has seen it firsthand. And it's this idea of relationship that I want to go on for a little bit.
Okay.
Because Dr. Samuel Lewis.
Loomis.
I keep saying Lewis. Loomis. I know it's
Dr. St. Louis.
Dr. St. Louis. No. Oh. Dr. St. Loomis. But let's be honest. He's a saint.
Yes, he is.
I mean, hey.
He's doing the job of the watchman already.
That's right. Loomis knows Michael, and he has watched him grow up from the night he was brought to him.
At 6 years old.
Michael Myers has been with Sam Loomis. Wait, was it six?
Yeah.
It was six. Yeah. And even talking with the sheriff, let's go to this scene. Let's fast forward a little bit. Loomis and the sheriff, they are in the Myers household. Loomis is walking the sheriff through the rooms, and he's describing what's happened.
Right up to the sister's room. This is where it happened.
Exactly.
He could see through this window.
Yeah. And as he's looking through that window, something crashes down, and Loomis freaks out so
much. Pulls out his gun.
Pulls out his pistol.
Yes!
And the sheriff says, Loomis says, I suppose you think I'm a sinister doctor. And the sheriff's like, no, I just think you're a little scared. And then Loomis says, you're right, I am scared. And here's how he follows that up.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left. No reason, no conscience, no understanding, and even the most rudimentary sense of life or death, of good or evil, right or wrong. I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
Dr. Loomis put in the groundwork in this relationship with Michael Myers. He knows him in and out. He spent 8 years trying to reach him, trying to connect with him on a deeper or as deeply as he could. But then after those 8 years, when he realized that there is no communication with this entity, there is no conscience, there is no sense of right or wrong,
no reason, no rhyme.
Exactly. Once he realizes this, Loomis then takes it on himself to try to keep Michael locked down. Try to keep him locked up, either way, out of society, out of other people's way, so that he cannot cause any more harm. Loomis knows this because Loomis has that relationship, and because Loomis has this relationship, he knows the gravity of the situation, and he knows what essentially is coming to Haddonfield, Illinois.
What do we do? He's been here once tonight. I think he'll come back. I'm going to wait for him.
I still think I should notify the radio and television.
No. If you do that, they'll see him on every street corner. They'll look for him in every house. Just tell your men to keep their mouths shut and their eyes open.
I'll check back in an hour.
He's telling the sheriff to tell his men to prepare for the worst. And even in a later sound clip, and I don't know if this borrows from your sound clip, but Loomis even tells Death, he tells the sheriff, Death has come to your little town. In a way, he's saying Death is right at the door. He's on this very street.
On the threshold,
he tells the sheriff, you go around the back of the houses, I'll watch up here on the front. You wouldn't do that if Death was far away. If you're looking for someone like Michael Myers, you're going to have your attention, your preparedness, you're going to have your mental acuity on the lookout for this monster. In that sense, I think I see in Dr. Loomis an example of someone walking in the light.
Oh, how's that?
Well, because he is walking in the truth, and light is often, in fact, most often, if not always, associated with truth in the scripture. Light equals scripture, or excuse me, light equals truth. Light equals a place where there is rhyme, there is reason, there is an ordered system, there is a cosmos. There is not this immovable force, this destiny.
The light also offers escape from the dark.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's why I want to bring up 1 John 1:5-7.
Okay.
This, of course, is out of the NLT, the New Living Translation.
Living, as living, opposed to dead.
As opposed to the NASBA, the North American Slasher Bible.
Oh.
I thought of that on the way over.
Yeah, and you, boy.
John says, "This is the message that we have heard from Jesus and now declare to you, that God is light, and there is no darkness in him at all. So we are lying if we say that we have fellowship with God, but go on living in spiritual darkness. We are not practicing the truth. But if we are living in the light, as God is in the light, then we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus Christ, his Son, cleanses us from all sin."
Oh my goodness.
Dr. Sam Loomis is that light, and he's one of the few redemption points in this film. Redemption in the Christian context. He is there warning the people because he knows Michael Myers. He knows the evil.
This is like Bunny Burrow gone bad. It really is. This is a bizarro world version of Zootopia. That just dawned on me.
I could see that.
Because now somebody is going into Bunny Burrow, and actually one of my sound clips coming up is going to seal that. So remember that. There are so many things going on in this episode with these images, and Brendan, I have to throw this out there right now because it's just blowing my mind that, listeners, if you tune in to the most recent episode of Secret Fire Podcast, which actually airs, it's released the day after Finding Christ in Cinema, is going to be released on October 31st,
mm-hmm.
That verse is going to tie in directly to what I'm going to talk about on the Secret Fire Podcast, as well as some of the verses that I'm going to pull up here in just a few minutes. It's amazing. Okay, you are painting a great picture. Carry on.
I'll just quickly finish up. Again, Dr. Loomis knows Michael. He knows the evil, and Dr. Loomis feels compelled. Maybe it's out of compassion for the people of Haddonfield.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
First you feel it, then you do it. That's how compassion works. It has to happen to you. That feeling like he's in the payphone. And well, actually the moment that Michael Myers escapes, actually probably the moment that they notice that there are inmates running around outside in the rain, and the driver of the car, she says, they let these people go, you know, free rein right now. Already his sacrum is jiggling.
So just another tie into Secret Fire. Something we've been talking about with the chapter that we're in, the Council of Elrond, a part of storytelling is the crisis and climax.
Okay.
Crisis and climax. Crisis is the situation that a character cannot control, that is out of their control. The climax is how they decide to deal with it. Compassion creates a crisis.
So does the climax at this film begin right when he shows up at the, right near the beginning of the film when he's at the payphone? Does that begin the climax?
That would be the climax for Act One.
Okay.
It's not the overall climax. It's not the ultimate climax. Think of this film as an Act Three, a three-act play.
Okay.
The crisis of Act One would be Sam Loomis deciding and consciously choosing to pursue Michael Myers to Haddonfield.
Because the compassion that he feels causes him to do something. He's going to show mercy,
yes,
on Haddonfield by getting there as quickly as possible,
mm-hmm,
calling the troops, calling out the army, you know, figuratively speaking, when he calls the sheriff.
Yeah.
Get all of your men on the alert.
And what would qualify this film to be a tragedy then is that for at least a few people, he's too late. Because they do end up dying at the hands of this monster. Michael, that's my point. Dr. Sam Loomis is walking in the light. And he's trying to oust the darkness in Haddonfield.
Because he is a watchman on the wall.
Exactly.
And a watchman on the wall performs that function because of compassion and because of tenderhearted mercy. Mm-hmm. That's why they are doing that. Going back to Ezekiel chapter 33, verses 2 through 5. Son of man, give your people this message. When I bring an army against a country, the people of that land chooses one of their own to be a watchman. Well, Dr. Loomis chooses himself to be the watchman because he feels responsible for keeping a lid on, as much as possible, on this evil. Just like in your soundbite, what I saw behind those boys' eyes was purely and simply evil. There's another watchman, though, and that's young Tommy. Has his peepers peeled.
That's right.
All the time. And here comes, and it's Halloween night, and he is watching a great film that I hope to cover someday. It's one of my very favorite films, Forbidden Planet. Okay. Excellent film. One of the greatest sci-fi films, and very psychological. And they're talking about the id and the super id and things like that. There's a lot of good stuff in that film. Anyway, so here is Tommy playing a joke on Lindsay. He's hiding behind a curtain, and he's wanting to scare her, and he ends up looking out the window and seeing death.
There's no boogeyman, and if you don't stop all this, I'm gonna have to turn off the TV and send you to bed.
Nobody believes me. I believe you, Tommy.
Well, I believe that the budget did not allow them to hire better child actors. However, we will overlook that. Yes?
Michael, I so agree with you. And I didn't think we were going to talk about that, but yes,
it's a shame that they couldn't afford better. But so Lori is babysitting, and now she's in charge of not only Tommy but Lindsay as well, because her friend is out neglecting her babysitting duties.
Babysitting with Dr. Sam Lewis.
Yes, yeah. And so here we have another watchman, and nobody believes me. Nobody believes me. Well, getting back to Ezekiel, chapter 33, when the watchman sees the enemy coming, he sounds the alarm to warn the people. Then, if those who hear the alarm refuse to take action, it is their own fault if they die. What does Lori say? There is no boogeyman. There is no boogeyman. Peace! Peace! Oh, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 2 through 4 out of the NASB. Paul writing to the church in Thessalonica, if that's how you prefer to pronounce that word. And this is, most scholars agree, this is the very first letter that he wrote. This would have been written in the 50s, not the 1950s, the 50s.
The 50s.
Just the 50s. For you yourselves know full well that the day of the Lord will come just like a thief in the night. While they are saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly, like labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness. Goes right with your verse. You're not in darkness. You're in light. You are not in darkness, that the day would overtake you like a thief. Dr. Loomis is not in darkness, and he is trying to spread the light. Just like Tommy is sounding out that alarm, Dr. Loomis sounded out the alarm, but people are not listening to either one of them. Let's go to another exchange with Dr. Loomis and the sheriff.
You all right?
Yeah.
Nothing's going on except kids playing pranks, trick-or-treating, parking, getting high. I have the feeling that you're way off on this.
You have the wrong feeling.
Well, you're not doing very much to prove me wrong.
What more do you need?
Well, it's going to take more than fancy talk to keep me up all night crawling around these bushes.
I watched him for 15 years, sitting in a room, staring at a wall, not seeing the wall, looking past the wall, looking at this night, inhumanly patient, waiting for some secret, silent alarm to trigger him off. Death has come to your little town, Sheriff. You can either ignore it or you can help me to stop it.
More fancy talk. Doctor, do you know what Haddonfield is? Families, children, all lined up in rows up and down these streets. You're telling me they're lined up for a slaughterhouse.
they could be.
No, peace, Dr. Loomis, peace. This is Haddonfield, Illinois. Do you know what Haddonfield, Illinois is all about? Do you know what Haddonfield is? It's families, children, all lined up in rows up and down these streets. You're telling me they're lined up for a slaughterhouse. I don't believe it. Peace. We have peace. Getting back to Ezekiel chapter 13, verse 10. It is definitely because they have misled my people by saying peace when there is no peace. And when anyone builds a wall, behold, they plaster it over with whitewash. Ah, let's make this look real nice. Everything's great. We got our white picket fences here in Haddonfield, Illinois. And God is warning through Ezekiel, I am sending an army. Death is coming to your little town of Jerusalem. And your great whitewashed wall will not stop because this is an immovable force. A mountain is coming to crush you, is the story in the Old Testament. It is carried all the way up into Paul's letter to the Thessalonians. An immovable force, a supernatural force, fate, if you want to call it that. Time and chance, if you want to call it that. But you will not stand against it. So listen to your watchmen. Listen to your watchmen, for you, brethren, are not in darkness. We're talking to you, brothers and sisters out there. You, us, we are not in darkness. That something like a Michael Myers or the armies of Assyria or Babylon or whoever, Rome, they will not stand against us if we are in the light. Oh, Brendan, questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off the wall remarks.
I think we've got it.
Man, Halloween, there's light in there, but you have to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you watch the rest of the film and see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
And time and chance does overtake everyone. What is coming up next on Finding Christ in Cinema? Please!
Michael, with November coming on, we're going to hit some superhero movies that have recently come out. Michael, we're hitting in November Spider-Man Homecoming and, wait for it, buckle up, Wonder Woman.
Yes, I haven't seen Spider-Man, but Wonder Woman was a great film. And Brendan, we're only doing two films in November, correct?
Yes, it's a busy month. So
weeks are we taking off?
We're taking off November 4th, next week. And then we're taking off Thanksgiving.
All right.
The Saturday after Thanksgiving.
So the two middle weeks we'll have episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema, and it doesn't matter what takes place. All that matters is that we are part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. Oh, to witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational digital ministry, including all 154 episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema and the list of films we've covered, get over to ChristInCinema.com. Send all email to FCC@GCTNetwork.com.
You can call us up on the voice line and leave your voicemail feedback at 507-407-GCTN. That's 507-407-4286. But let's say you just want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
Which you can do and should do because
and
of
are.
The extra feedback segment.
Yes.
Yes. Do so at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play Music by searching them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the shows that we produce over there at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas,
The Theonauts!
And our Tolkien show, The Secret Fire Podcast, get over to gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
It was tied to a James T. Kirk mask.
And that is a wrap!
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission
at GCTNetwork.com.